Imagine locking the front door of your house, right? You head to bed and you're feeling completely secure. Only you don't realize a burglar hasn't just bypassed the lock, they've actually been living inside your walls for 3 days.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a terrifying thought.
Right, and they're operating with like the speed of a supercomputer, rewiring your alarm system, and then they just change the locks on you entirely from the inside.
Right, which is, I mean, that's the new reality we're dealing with today.
Exactly. Welcome to the new era of autonomous systems, everyone. Today, we are diving into a really massive stack of sources from Teak and Knight, and we are zeroing in on one just overarching theme, which is, well, it's shifting control.
Yeah, shifting control. Because we're looking at how the deepest, most entrenched rules across tech, gaming, and even global finance are just being aggressively rewritten, basically overnight.
Yeah, while we speak, honestly. So if you're out there listening, you're trying to cut through the noise. You know, if you love a good aha moment and you need to understand the actual mechanics of what's changing around you, you are definitely in the right place.
Absolutely. Because it is a phenomenal stack of sources today. We're looking at a landscape where the standard corporate playbook has essentially just been thrown completely out the window.
Yeah, it really has. We've got a roadmap today that covers an AI pricing war that's just totally changing the economics of tech. We've
Yeah.
got an autonomous AI hack that breaks basically all the rules of cybersecurity.
Not to mention a massive, like, 180-degree strategic U-turn by Xbox.
Right, and a literal grassroots battle to save physical video games, plus a 4-week ticking clock to save the US crypto industry.
It is a lot of ground to cover.
It is. Okay, let's unpack this. We're going to start with the absolute earthquake that happened last night in the AI sector. Because, you know, on July 8, 2026, literally just last night, Elon Musk dropped Grok 4.5.
Yeah, he did. And he's positioning this as a true Opus class model, right? So it's specifically optimized for heavy coding, long context tasks.
Right, the benchmarks are super high. But looking at these sources, the tech specs aren't even what's causing the real panic in Silicon Valley this morning.
No, not at all.
It's the price tag, because Grok 4.5 costs exactly one-tenth of what competitors like Anthropic's Claude Opus and OpenAI's GPT 4.5 are charging.
Exactly one-tenth. It's staggering.
It's insane. So looking at this mathematically, my immediate instinct is that this has to be like a loss leader strategy. I mean, it's like someone just released a brand new Ferrari for the price of a used Honda Civic. How is this even financially possible without going bankrupt? Is Musk simply bleeding cash just to starve out the competition?
You know, that is the natural assumption to make, right? That it's just billionaire predatory pricing. But, and this is crucial, when you look at the architecture Musk has built over the last 4 months, this isn't a subsidy.
And it's not.
No, it is a massive structural advantage. To understand the mechanics of how he actually achieved that one-tenth price point, you have to look at this three-company consolidation he just executed.
Okay, lay that out for us.
So first, obviously, you have xAI providing the core neural network architecture. But if you look at AI, the two most expensive bottlenecks are server infrastructure and training data.
Right, the hardware and the knowledge.
Exactly. So in April 2026, xAI merged with SpaceX.
Which, wait, that gives them direct access to SpaceX's massive data center infrastructure, right? The ones they originally built for Starlink?
Precisely. They have this global space-grade infrastructure. So they completely bypass the massive premiums that, say, Amazon or Microsoft charge for cloud computing.
Oh, wow. Okay, so that handles the hardware side of the equation.
Right. The second half is the data. So back in March 2026, Musk acquired Cursor.
The code editor.
Yeah, the premier AI code editor. He bought it for $2.1 billion. And that acquisition basically unlocked trillions of tokens of real-world developer data.
Trillions. Okay, let's pause and mechanically break down what that means for you listening, because trillions of tokens sounds like, you know, abstract tech jargon.
Yeah.
A token in AI is essentially a fundamental unit of language or logic. So by absorbing Cursor, Grok isn't just reading textbooks on how to code.
No, not at all. It is literally absorbing the keystrokes and the problem-solving patterns of millions of professional human developers.
Right.
If you train an AI just on textbooks, it understands the theory, sure, but it burns massive amounts of computing power trying to reason its way through a complex, novel problem.
Because it's figuring it out from scratch every time.
Exactly. But the Cursor data gives Grok the digital equivalent of, like, developer muscle memory. It doesn't have to think as hard or calculate nearly as many dead ends to find a solution.
So just to use an analogy, if OpenAI and Anthropic are trying to get from New York to LA by engineering faster, more expensive cars, Musk basically just bought a teleporter.
That's a great way to put it. Grok uses significantly less computing power to arrive at the exact same high-quality code, and that fundamentally collapses the operating cost.
Wow. But here's where it gets really interesting, though. Because Musk's roadmap states that he isn't just dropping Grok 4.5 and walking away. He is actually committed to releasing one new model every single month through the end of 2026.
Yeah, which is an aggressive timeline.
It's wild. That is five more models, escalating in capability, deployed in rapid succession.
And what's fascinating here is the economic trap this sets for Anthropic and OpenAI. Because by leveraging that structural efficiency to maintain a one-tenth price point, Musk is forcing his competitors into a totally impossible binary choice.
Right.
Option A, they slash their own prices to match Grok, which immediately vaporizes their profit margins. And this is in a business that requires billions in capital just to keep the lights on.
Right. Or option B, they keep their high prices, but then they have to justify that massive premium to developers. And the only way you justify a 10x premium is to offer significantly better capabilities.
Exactly. Which means they have to initiate a massive, immediate surge in R&D spending.
Right at the exact moment the revenue is tanking because all their users are migrating to the cheaper Grok model.
It's a squeeze. Either way they pivot, their financial stability just takes a massive hit. Musk is intentionally forcing the industry to choose between market share and profitability.
And the sheer velocity of that deployment, a new model every 4 weeks, it really shows how fast autonomous systems are accelerating in general, which honestly perfectly bridges into our next source.
Yeah, because that speed isn't staying confined to the tech sector.
Exactly. That hyper-accelerated AI capability isn't just staying neatly confined to corporate pricing wars. It's bleeding out into the wild, and it's being aggressively weaponized. We have this deeply unsettling new report from the security firm Signia.
It's a tough read.
It details a cyberattack on a global company's AWS cloud environment. The entire infrastructure was compromised, and the company was held for ransom in exactly 72 hours.
Yeah. And just to contextualize why 72 hours is setting off alarms across the entire cybersecurity world normally, mapping a sprawling corporate cloud environment, finding all the blind spots, securing domain control, that typically requires a highly coordinated human team working painstakingly for weeks or even months.
Okay, let me push back on the mechanics of this attack to make sure we are crystal clear here. When we say an AI compromised the environment, are we talking about a human hacker just using a fancy digital lockpick to crack a password faster? Or are we talking about something else? Wait, so this AI wasn't just a fancy digital lockpick for a human hacker. You're saying the AI acted like an independent autonomous burglar exploring the house entirely on its own.
Yes. We are talking about something entirely different. The industry classifies this as agentic AI.
Agentic AI.
Right. So the human attacker's involvement was incredibly brief. They just sent a standard phishing email, an employee clicked it, and that compromised their baseline credentials. But the moment that initial foothold was secured, the human handed the reins entirely over to the agentic AI and basically just stepped back.
So the AI is acting autonomously inside the network.
Completely autonomously.
Yeah.
Agentic AI doesn't just run, a static script of pre-programmed commands. It independently sets objectives.
Wow.
In this case, it dynamically explored the AWS environment, found an open port, realized it could use that port to access a low-level service account, use that account to scrape memory for higher-level administrative passwords, and suddenly, boom, it had total control.
It's improvising.
Exactly. It
Yeah.
improvises. It chains vulnerabilities together, learning from the environment in real time. But the scary part is, it executes these decisions at machine speed.
Meaning a single human with an agentic AI took down a massive global corporate infrastructure in a long weekend.
Yep, 3 days.
So for anyone listening whose company relies on cloud servers, which is, let's face it, virtually everyone at this point, what is the mechanical defense against something that moves that fast?
Well, the primary takeaway from the Signia report is that the era of traditional perimeter defense is just dead.
Like the castle wall approach?
Exactly. You can no longer build a massive firewall and assume the interior of your network is safe. The cybersecurity industry is rapidly having to shift to an assume breach mentality. You have to operate under the assumption that the attacker is already inside the house.
Because statistically speaking, someone in the company is always going to click the phishing link, right?
Precisely. Which means companies must immediately transition to zero trust architecture.
Okay, mechanically, what does zero trust actually look like?
Mechanically, it means abandoning the idea of a secure internal network. Instead of a bank vault where everything inside is freely accessible, once you bypass the heavy front door, it's more like a highly secure hotel.
Okay.
Your key card only gets you into your specific room for a specific window of time. And every single time you want to enter the gym or the elevator or a conference room, the system re-verifies your identity and your intent. And you have to pair that with defensive AI behavioral analytics. These constantly monitor the network for the anomalous micro-movements of an offensive AI. Because human reflexes simply cannot compete in this new arms race.
Man, that transition to an assumed breach reality in the cloud, it perfectly illustrates this massive cultural friction point that's happening right now. Because if the cloud is structurally vulnerable and corporate servers can be hijacked by autonomous agents in 72 hours, well, it explains why consumers are suddenly terrified of surrendering control of their physical media.
It's the exact same theme of shifting control, just manifesting in the physical economy rather than the digital one.
Let's look at this Don't Kill the Disc petition. So PNP Games, an independent Canarian retailer that's been operating since 2008, caught wind of Sony's internal timeline to completely eliminate physical PlayStation discs.
Right. Their plan is to move to entirely digital-only consoles by January 2028.
January 2028. So PNP launched a petition protesting the move. And within a single week, it secured over 220,000 signatures. Because, I mean, it is a massive shift from tree ownership to mere access, where you're entirely reliant on a corporate server giving you permission to play a game you bought. It feels like burning down the entire public library just because you invented a better e-reader.
That's a great way to look at it. And the consumer anxiety makes perfect sense. But if we connect this to the bigger picture, the stakes are actually much higher than just a gamer wanting a plastic box on their shelf.
Oh, definitely.
The physical disc actually acts as the keystone for a massive, highly fragile secondary economy.
Break the causality of that down for us. Like, how does a $70 piece of plastic sustain all of this?
Think of the physical game as an economic engine. When Sony prints a disc, it sustains a $4.2 billion annual manufacturing and packaging sector.
Wow.
It sustains a $2.8 billion logistics and distribution network. And crucially, it feeds over 15,000 independent retail stores in North America alone.
Right.
That represents roughly 80,000 jobs.
Because those stores rely on selling used games.
Exactly. They rely on the trade-in liquidity of physical discs to survive. When Sony decides to kill the disc and sell a digital code directly through the PlayStation Store, they eliminate that entire supply chain.
Right. They keep the 30% retail margin for themselves, but in doing so, they essentially bankrupt the secondary market overnight.
Yeah. And beyond the economic collapse of the retail sector, you have historians and archivists sounding the alarm on a really profound cultural loss.
Right. Game preservation.
Because if the server dies, the game vanishes. I mean, look at history. In 2023, Sony delisted hundreds of PlayStation 3 games. Nintendo permanently shut down the digital eShops for the Wii U and the 3DS. Microsoft closed the Xbox 360 store.
So for thousands of titles, if you didn't already have them downloaded onto a hard drive, they are legally gone forever. You can't buy them.
But a physical disc. 50 years from now, you can buy a used console at a garage sale, and the game still functions entirely independent of a corporate server. Future historians might lose an entire generation of culture if everything is digital.
It's the difference between buying a painting and buying a ticket to view a painting in a gallery that, you know, might burn down tomorrow.
Exactly.
But, you know, while Sony is aggressively pushing that digital-only, server-dependent future, their biggest rival just realized that abandoning your hardware ecosystem completely shatters consumer trust. Microsoft has been forced into a desperate, massive, strategic U-turn with the Xbox brand.
Oh, absolutely. Microsoft's pivot over the last few weeks is one of the starkest admissions of failure in modern gaming history.
Yeah. Through 2024 and 2025, Microsoft pivoted to this multi-platform strategy. They started porting major exclusive Xbox games over to PlayStation. They were basically telling the market that the hardware didn't matter, just the software. But now, in a complete 180, they've backtracked.
Yeah, they had to.
They announced major upcoming titles like Gears of War, E-Day, which is a prequel coming in October 2026, and InXile's steampunk RPG Clockwork Revolution coming in 2027. They announced those will remain strict Xbox and PC exclusives. Why? The sudden retreat.
Well, the Q1 2026 data basically forced their hand. By going multi-platform, they destroyed the underlying psychology of why someone buys a console in the first place.
What do you mean?
Well, a video game console isn't just a piece of consumer electronics. Psychologically, it is a futures contract.
A futures contract. That is a perfect way to frame it, because when you spend $500 on a plastic box, you are buying the exclusive right to access specific, highly anticipated software over the next, say, 7 years.
Exactly. And when Microsoft started releasing Xbox games on PlayStation, they breached that contract.
Right.
The market response was absolutely brutal. Xbox Series X and S hardware sales plummeted by 40% in Q1 2026.
40%.
Yeah. Their total hardware market share collapsed from 28% to 19%. And most alarmingly, Game Pass, which is the subscription service that was supposed to be the lifeblood of their whole digital future, it flatlined with 0% growth.
Because without exclusive games to anchor the hardware, the entire Xbox ecosystem began to unravel. They literally had to mandate exclusivity for Gears of War just to target a 25% growth recovery by Q4 2026.
Yeah, they had to create genuine reasons to buy the console.
See, I am looking at these numbers, and this is where I fundamentally struggle with Microsoft's public relations strategy here. Because Phil Spencer, the head of Xbox, recently told the press that moving forward, exclusivity decisions will be made on a case-by-case basis.
Right.
But Xbox head Phil Spencer said exclusivity will be decided on a case-by-case basis. Doesn't that ambiguity totally undermine the whole trust us, buy an Xbox's message? Why would a gamer trust them now? I mean, why would I drop $500 on an Xbox if they might just port the game to PlayStation 12 months later anyway?
I agree completely. It is a massive communication failure because uncertainty kills hardware investment.
Right.
You are asking consumers to absorb all the risk.
Mm.
Now, if you want to see the mechanical opposite of this, how a company actively builds trust to save a struggling product, look at what Nintendo did last month with the Switch 2.
Oh, with the new Yoshi game, right?
Yes. So Yoshi and the Mysterious Book launched on May 21st, 2026, and sales were dragging significantly below expectations. But instead of vague PR promises, Nintendo released a massive free eShop demo.
Containing the entire first chapter of the game, I read.
Yeah. And crucially, the architecture of the demo allows your save progress to transfer seamlessly into the full retail version if you decide to upgrade.
It's a brilliant player-first mechanic. It completely removes the risk. Nintendo is saying, we believe in the software, play it for free, and we respect your time enough not to make you replay the tutorial. It relies on mechanical certainty to drive sales, whereas Xbox is just relying on ambiguous promises.
And certainty is the ultimate currency when an ecosystem is in trouble.
Well, speaking of needing certainty to function, the gaming industry has the luxury of tweaking PR and dropping free demos to find it. But right now, an entire sector of the U.S. financial system is staring down a ticking clock. They've got a 4-week legislative cliff just to get the basic rules of the road in writing.
Yeah, this is a scenario where regulatory gridlock has created an environment of sheer panic. We're looking at the Bitcoin Clarity Act, and the mechanics of the legislative calendar meantime is essentially up.
The U.S. Senate has exactly 20 working days before they adjourn for the August 7th recess.
Just 20 days.
If they do not pass this historic crypto market structure bill by that date, the industry is bracing for a massive, catastrophic capital flight out of the United States.
And to understand the stakes here, you really have to look at the turf war that has paralyzed the industry for years.
Mm.
Crypto firms have been caught in this jurisdictional nightmare between the SEC and the CFTC. They literally do not know which federal agency is legally authorized to regulate their specific digital assets.
It's like trying to play a high-stakes sport where two different referees are on the field blowing whistles using completely different rule books and penalizing you for following the other guy's rules.
Precisely. Capital cannot flow in that environment. So the Clarity Act resolves the turf war. It provides definitive mechanical frameworks for how stablecoins are audited, how decentralized finance protocols operate, and exactly how exchanges secure federal licenses. And the consensus is already there. It passed the House 294 to 134 back in July 2025.
And it cleared the Senate Banking Committee 15-9 just this past May, on May 14th, 2026.
Right.
It feels like a massive high-stakes game of regulatory chicken. Bitcoin is already down 28% since May 14 due to this uncertainty. If I'm a major institutional investor, aren't I just packing my bags and moving my capital to Europe or Asia at this point?
This raises an important question about America's grip on technological and financial leadership, because the 20-day window is critical. If they hit the Argus recess without passing the bill, Congress returns in September, and September is the heart of the midterm election season.
Oh, and politicians do not touch highly complex, controversial financial legislation right before an election?
Never. Meaning if it doesn't pass in the next 4 weeks, it is effectively shelved until the new Congress in 2027.
Wow, that's a huge delay.
Yeah. Market analysts project that a failure to pass will trigger an immediate 30% to 40% drop in Bitcoin as institutional capital aggressively flees U.S. markets. Conversely, if it passes and provides that certainty, they project a 40% to 60% surge as sidelined institutional money floods in. It is a strictly binary outcome.
So what does this all mean? We started today mapping out the theme of shifting control and seeing these stories laid out side by side. The velocity of this transition is staggering. We have Elon Musk merging space infrastructure with developer data to aggressively weaponize the economics of AI. We have autonomous AI agents taking tactical control of cyber attacks away from human operators, moving at literal machine speed.
Yeah, it's everywhere.
We have 220,000 gamers fighting to maintain physical ownership of their media while giants like Microsoft and the United States Senate scramble to inject certainty into ecosystems that are rapidly spiraling out of their control.
Whether you are looking at the price of coding compute, the integrity of a cloud server, the viability of a gaming console, or the regulatory status of a digital asset, the foundational structures are all cracking under the pressure of forced evolution.
Exactly. And whether you listening are a developer leveraging Grok, or a gamer deciding if a Switch 2 or an Xbox is the safer bet, or an investor watching the August legislative calendar, these massive structural rewrites are happening right now, in real time, and they will affect you directly. But before we go, I want to leave you with one brand new final thought to mull over. Something that connects two threads from today that I don't think most people have synthesized yet.
Okay, what is it?
We spent a good portion of today unpacking Sony's push to eliminate physical discs by 2028, trying to force gamers into an all-digital, server-dependent ecosystem where we merely access what we buy. But we also just detailed how agentic AI is now capable of autonomously mapping, exploiting, and ransoming massive global cloud environments in just 72 hours.
Oh, wow.
Are we blindly rushing to surrender the last of our physical media and local data over to corporate cloud servers at the exact historical moment? Those same servers are becoming fundamentally impossible to defend against autonomous AI.
That is a profound collision of economic ambition and technological vulnerability.
It really is. Something to keep in mind the next time you click purchase on a digital download. Thank you so much for joining us for this deep dive. Keep questioning the mechanics of the world around you, keep looking for those connections, and we will see you next time.